Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
It could be a rough few weeks for NFL head coaches because the seats are heating up. You've got Doug Marone, you have Dan Quinn, you have Matt Patricia. Of course, the clubhouse leader and the most talked about member of that field is Jason Garrett. But the Clapper did not have a game on Sunday, so nothing could have changed for him, right? Wrong. He may not have had a game, but Jerry Jones had his radio program on Tuesday, and Jones did his very best to put out that Garrett fire by dumping barrels of gasoline all over the flames.
Nobody's got the exclusive skills to get the job done so that collectively you can win a Super Bowl. But they're qualified people. Jason Garrett is one of them. In my opinion, Jason Garrett will be coaching in the NFL next year.
104.3, the fan with that audio. 105.3, I should say. First off, I've got no idea whatsoever what this guy's talking about with the first two sentences of that quote. Jerry said, quote, "Nobody has the exclusive skills to get the job done so that collectively you can win a Super Bowl," end quote. The hell does that even mean? The hell does anything this guy says at this point even mean? That sounds like something that somebody would say when they're trying to sound really smart, but actually have no idea what they're talking about. The hell does Jerry Jones even know about winning a Super Bowl anyway? Jimmy Johnson won him the ones that he has. And then when Johnson got all the credit and Jones got none, he ran his coach off. And he hasn't got anywhere near sniffing the Lombardi ever since then. So what does Jones know about winning the Super Bowl or who's qualified to do it or not? Still, he insists that Jason Garrett is one of the people who is qualified to win a Lombardi trophy. Debatable. In fact, most Cowboy fans would tell you there actually is no debate. Plenty would pose the question, exactly what does Garrett do that sets him apart from any other head coach? Exactly what is this guy really good at besides clapping? And that's not me talking junk about Red. I mean that as a serious question. Where does this guy excel? What is this guy known for? What is Garrett's process? What kind of a culture has he created there? Exactly what does this guy do other than clap? I literally have no idea. Jerry Jones, though, must. He's kept this guy around for a decade, and he insists that Garrett is one of the chosen few. Quote, "In my opinion, Jason Garrett will be coaching in the NFL next year," end quote. That's got to be pretty reassuring, huh, Red? Your contract is up. Your team is underachieving again, but it's all good because the owner just said you will be coaching in the NFL next year. Just maybe not here, and maybe not as a head coach. Like, that was the sound of Jarrah cranking the thermostat in the coach's office to about 1,000 degrees. Still, Jarrah is doing what Jarrah does best, talking out of both sides of his mouth. So, bottom line this for me, Jarrah, I'm confused. Is Garrett your man or not?
Well, first of all, Jason Garrett's a good coach. To start right there, he's a good coach. Jason Garrett, make no mistake about it, is one of the smartest coaches, and he's also one of the hardest working coaches. He knows his team better than anybody. So I'm glad to have him. He is the guy for the job.
He knows this team better than anybody. Generally, the vote of confidence is the kiss of death, but that's not even that. The best thing that guy can say about his coach is he knows the team better than anybody. Like, yeah, I'll tell you what, Jason Garrett, he knows everybody by name. He can identify every single player on the team. He's great at that. He knows their names. He knows their wife's names. He even knows some of their kids' names. Like, I know Jerry meant that as a compliment, but it sounds like he's talking about a diehard fan of the team and not his head coach. And if the best that Jones can say about Garrett, if that's it, then he's as good as gone. Winning the sorry NFC East is not going to be enough to save Garrett. Neither will making it to the postseason and advancing. Says right here, Jason Garrett's going to have to make a deep, deep run in the postseason, maybe even a Super Bowl run to save his gig. And looking at him and looking at them, that's just not happening. But clap them up, Red. And just know, nobody could ever take that fiery lettuce from you. So you've got that going for you, which is something, I guess. And Jason Garrett was not the only one feeling the heat yesterday. While everybody has been focused on Garrett, Pat Shurmur has quietly been putting together a truly hideous run with the Giants. They're 2-10 this year. They're 2-13 in their last 15. They've lost 8 straight. It has gotten so bad, it makes Ben McAdoo and his comically oversized suit and window breakers and greased back lettuce look like Bill Parcells. The B-man was 13-15 when he was canned, and he had a playoff appearance on his resume. Shurmur doesn't have any of that. And yet he's so desperate to make chicken bleep seem like chicken salad that he was hyping Daniel Jones for throwing INTs instead of fumbling. So yesterday, Giants co-owner Steve Tisch was asked by Bruce Beck of WNBC if he and John Mara had confidence in Shurmur and GM Dave Gettleman. He said, quote, "Those decisions and conversations are not going to be made this morning. It's really at the end of the season that John and I are going to sit down and talk about these issues," end quote. So maybe that puts Shurmur into the lead in the race that nobody wants to win. Or at least he was, until Carolina's David Tepper stepped in and took action. And that action was firing Ron Rivera.
Uh-oh.
I mean, I know there had been rumblings, but even then, that's still pretty shocking. Because unlike Garrett and Shurmur, Rivera actually has had success. Rivera had a long run in Carolina. Riverboat Ron was a legend there. He led Carolina to the playoffs 4 times. He led them to an NFC title. And he's going on this year without his franchise quarterback. And the guy's pretty much universally loved and respected. Except remember, Tepper had told reporters 2 weeks back he was not interested in long-term mediocrity. And then that was followed up by losses to New Orleans and Washington. So I'm not going to say that Rivera deserved to be fired or deserved better treatment than this, but if the guy in charge says he's not interested in long-term mediocrity, and then your team loses to Washington, an organization so terrible that long-term mediocrity would be an improvement, then you know something's going to go down. And they're not going to wait until the end of the season, and they didn't. Tepper was running out of patience, and watching his team take a 14-0 lead over Washington only to allow 29 unanswered points is the kind of thing that's going to test your patience. The kind of thing that's going to get a head coach whacked, even one as good as Ron Rivera. So where does that leave us? Unlike Jerry Jones, Tepper is going to take action. He knows what he wants in a head coach. He knows who's probably going to be available. And he wanted to get out in front of it and start having those conversations and not have them while Rivera was still in the building, twisting. He said, quote, "I have great regard for Ron Rivera. He is one of the finest guys in the game, period. That's not bull bleep. That's just the way it is," end quote. All right, then. So he's going to get a head start on looking for the next coach. Then again, a head start on what? Who's he going to talk to? Guys who aren't employed by NFL teams, which means college coaches and former NFL coaches. Some of the NFL coaches without gigs are not exactly the most inspiring candidates. In other words, nobody wants to get a head start trying to bag Jay Gruden, right? Tepper didn't just fire Ron Rivera so he can get the first crack at Rex Ryan, right? I mean, I'm not exactly sure what's in Tepper's head. I just know that hiring Ryan isn't. Then again, this is about taking action and getting started. If you're going to do something eventually, you may as well do it immediately. And when you take that approach, there've got to be a lot of head coaches who are still employed right now that are going to be nervous. So that carousel has already started to spin. 1-800-636-8686. Ron Rivera does not strike me as a guy who's going to want to take some time off, charge his battery, take a look around, smell the roses. No, Rivera looks to me like a guy and sounds to me like a guy who's going to want to get after it again soon.
Do you want to
coach again?
Coaching?
Absolutely.
Or
absolutely.
You want to take some time away? You want to coach right away?
I got 4 weeks off.
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? This time, do not make a shake or eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender, and it's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And it goes wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Bill Clark is my guest. Bill, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. So you went into Saturday's game needing the win at North Texas and a Florida Atlantic win over Southern Miss to claim the West Division title for a second straight year. What was the vibe among the players heading into that game?
Well, you know, I think just the fact that we know we're playing for a championship, and, you know, I think anytime you're at the last game of the year and you get that opportunity, it's special. So, I don't think you could ask for more to get a chance to play for a championship that late in the year, and there we were. We knew we needed some help, but I said, let's just take care of what we can take care of.
Then you've got T.D. Marshall, Bill, who made a play, a 76-yard pick late in the third quarter that gave you a 26-21 lead that you did not relinquish. When you forced the turnover on downs late in the fourth quarter and you got the ball back and then you picked up the first down to ice the game, what kind of emotions were you feeling at that point?
Oh, my gosh, it was just crazy. I mean, and I really had not heard the score since somebody gave me one at halftime that FAU was leading, but it wasn't official, and it was like, all right, victory formation, Southern Miss has lost, FAU's won, we're the champs. I mean, it was all together, and it was terrific.
Bill Clark joining us. You know, in that game also, the defense had 7 sacks, 11 tackles for a loss, and a pair of interceptions, including Marshall's pick 6. So how fitting was it that it was your defense, which is top 5 in the nation, that came through yet again with another huge performance?
Yeah, I think it was just fitting. I mean, our offense was playing well, and you know, we lost our quarterback, and we had to have our young redshirt freshman come in. But the defense has just been unbelievable, and for them to win it really for us on a takeaway and a score was very fitting.
UAB head coach Bill Clark joining us here in the Jungle. So you're back in the championship game again, but this season's been really different from last year. You lost more than 30 seniors. You went through a stretch in the middle of the season where you had a pair of back-to-back losses on the road. You dealt with some key injuries, yet you bounced back. What was that stretch in early November like, and how proud are you with the way everybody responded?
Well, I think, you know, we had become a throwing team. You know, we early on we struggled because we had, you know, all these new linemen, and we had some really good receivers. We started throwing, and then we lose our quarterback against Tennessee. And, you know, we go in there to Southern Miss and don't play well. We probably try and throw it too much, which is my fault. And we had to reinvent ourselves. And to see us get our running game back, get the physicality back, play great defense, and then win those games, it was just special.
I'm talking to Bill Clark. The Conference USA Championship game is UAB at FAU. It's Saturday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, right here on CBS Sports Network. Now, as you and I have talked about, last year was so special because of everything that everybody had been through with rebuilding that program from scratch. And then you win the conference championship and a bowl game. It's pretty much impossible to compare one season to another. But how special is this one when you replace all that talent and you still get back to the championship game? And what's that say about the state of the program and the foundation that you've been able to build?
Yeah, I think as a coach, this is what I'm, you know, last year was, I don't really use that word surreal, but I guess that's what it was, just from nothing. But to then have a program, and I think people really kind of under their breath questioning, okay, you know, they got all these older guys and this, but what are they going to do now? And then to see our program sustain itself, we've only got, you know, 12 seniors, so we got this whole group coming back next year. I'm really proud of that. I mean, it's just a different kind of proud, but really proud.
You know, Bill, when you look at the way the team has adapted this year, from the outside, it seems like the adaptability was huge in the sense that when the injuries did strike, the running game kicked it in down the stretch. You averaged more than 240 yards the last 3 games. So what's it say about the players, and especially your wide receivers, who had to really embrace their roles as blockers?
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't have said a better, you know, way you said that, because here these guys are just all over the national news of leading in yards per catch and being dynamic. And then all of a sudden, okay, guys, you got to now take a step back and block. You know, so I think that tells you a lot about our coaches to get them to buy in. That tells you a lot about the kids to buy into it and just want to win. And that's what we talk about. That's what I love about football. It is the team. It is sacrificing for the team. And I think these guys did that.
UAB head football coach Bill Clark joining us. The championship game's coming up this weekend. You know, when you look at the senior class in particular, you've got a senior class that some of these guys, as an example, I would take like center Lee Dufour. He was one of the seniors who was a freshman back in 2014 when the program was disbanded. He comes back when the program was reinstated. So what's it mean to see him get rewarded with back-to-back trips to the conference championship game when you consider everything a guy like that's been through?
Yeah, I think that's just, I mean, that's the things you hope for. You pray for that a guy that believes and works hard, and then good things happen for him. So I think that's, you know, it's just sweet justice for a guy like that and Vogel, the Clipper, to come in, sacrifice, believe in the program, and they'll always be remembered around here as guys that helped bring it back and bring it back the right way.
All right, so tomorrow you're getting a send-off from the Football Operations Center before you head out to the championship game. What is this week like as you get ready for that? Is it just another game, or is it tough to ignore that there is a trophy and a championship involved, and it's more than just that game?
Yeah, I think that's what we always want to say is, man, we're proud of you. You've done something great, but we're not satisfied. So I'm sure FAU is saying the same thing, but it is, there is a championship, you know, on the line here, and that's what we don't want to forget. And I think we've had great preparation. I tell the players it's okay to be happy, but not be satisfied.
Bill Clark joining me for another moment or so. You mentioned FAU, so you're going to face them in their place, which means going up against Lane Kiffin. What kind of thoughts do you have about their offense and how he dials it up?
Well, you know, you've got a really good play caller. So just in what they do, one, they're running tempo, which, you know, you're seeing less of now. So, you know, this super fast pace and you know, they get the ball to their tight end, who's terrific. They run the ball. They run trick plays. They run RPOs. They stretch it vertically, horizontally. You know, you've got to defend it all. He does a really good job. And obviously, this is their second trip in 3 years, so he's done a great job.
You know, finally, Bill, you and I have talked about the vision for the program for years now, but back in the dark days, could you have imagined this reality, winning a conference championship so quickly, then getting a chance to repeat, or is this maybe even beyond all that?
I think it's beyond all that. I mean, you know, me and you talked about, could we be competitive, you know, years ago? Could we build this program the way we want to? Then all of a sudden, you know, we're in the championship game. That was just like a miracle, and now here we are. So I think it's beyond my wildest dreams.
He is the head football coach at UAB. He was the National Coach of the Year last year. And again, you've got the conference championship game. It's a big one. UAB at FAU, Saturday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern on CBS Sports Network. Bill, congrats. Good luck this weekend. And always nice to have you on the show.
Always good to be on, Jim. Thank you so much.
So everybody loves the feeling of winning, especially the feeling of winning the holidays. So if you're giving everybody Bombas socks this holiday, you deserve a spot in the Holiday Gifting Hall of Fame. First ballot, yo. Let me talk to you for a moment about Bombas socks. Did you know that socks are the number one most requested item in homeless shelters? Bombas socks were created to change that. For every pair you buy, Bombas donates a pair to somebody in need. So the company is amazing in that regard. Then you have the socks themselves. They're soft, not just pretty soft, but more like made with the softest cotton in the world, soft. And they are built with extra cushioning. So no matter whether you're walking the dog, kicking it at home, playing drums, or saving the world, you will always be comfortable. Bombas socks provide support in places that you didn't even know that you needed it, like your arches. Each sock is built with a special arch support system that's supportive but not too tight. Like a nice little hug, but on your foot. And ever notice the annoying toe seam that most socks have? That little ridge on the top? Bombas got rid of that. From now on, it's just smooth sailing all the way across the top of your foot. And it's such a great gift. You know that person who's just a gift enigma? Completely impossible to shop for? Well, Bombas is the gift that even that person is going to love. Everybody will. If you want to give someone a perfectly nice gift, give them a candle. If you want to be a holiday gifting ninja, give them Bombas. Go to bombas.com/Rome. Get 20% off any purchase during their big holiday sale, November 18th through December 5th. That's bombas.com/Rome and get 20% off. Bombas.com/Rome. And I want to talk some basketball, too. All sorts of bizarre in the association last night, starting with this dunk from James Harden against the San Antonio Spurs.
The steal and the dunk.
Oh, he missed it!
No, that was
wait a minute.
That ball went
that was
through.
Good, yeah. It came out.
I thought, wait a minute. Yeah, I was just checking it out.
Oh, remember the Manu play in New York a few years ago? I mean, this goes through, yeah. That was good.
Normally a hardened dunk is followed by the beard going with that signature nosebleed celebration. But that dunk was followed up by straight-up confusion because the dunk went down and it went through the hoop and then it flipped back around and the ref somehow completely missed it. And no worries, not a big thing, right? Not a big thing because the Rockets had a 13-point lead at that point. Actually, kind of a big thing because that game ended up going into OT and then double OT and the Rockets lost. So you think maybe those 2 points may have come in handy at the end of regulation. And to me, the question is, how is it possible that in an era where there's never been more technology and more reviews of plays in sports, that it seems like every single day there's a ref or an official or an umpire in some sport who's getting something wrong? I'm not even here to talk about that. Like, if I wanted to bash the refs, I could do that every single day for 3 hours. And it would be easy, and you would love it. Instead, I'm here to keep it positive. I'm here to talk about good news. I'm here to talk about good vibes, good feelings. And right about now, nobody's feeling better than Laker fan. They're rolling into work today. They've got their chest puffed out even more than usual, and they want you to come up on them and say, how you living? What's going on? Even better, you know what Laker fan wants? Laker fan wants you to question the Lakers. They want you to run the same tired questions you've been running at them all season long. You know, questions about who have you beaten? How easy is that schedule? Laker fan is now ready for that because after last night, they're going to hit you with this. Lakers 105, Nuggets 96. The Lakers just lost to the Mavs. That ended their winning streak, and all the Laker haters were out in force. Like, LA's been exposed. LA hasn't beaten anybody. LA is going to fold. Paper champs. They're nothing. And Laker fans are coming back now with, yeah, who have we beaten? They just beat the best team in the Northwest Division in their place, and they did it by 9. And they out-rebounded the Nuggets by 26, 68-42. So maybe there's no such thing as a statement win in December, but if there was, that would be it. Who have they beaten? They beat the Nuggets on the road. A really good Nuggets team, and they did it with Anthony Davis battling the flu.
AD, what's good, baby?
What's good, AD?
AD, what's good, baby?
And they still won. This guy got an IV at halftime. Then he dropped 13 of his 25 in the third quarter and played DPOY level defense on the other end. And remember, that's a rematch. Nearly 1 year later of a Denver win over LA that was so legendary, it gave the world this amazing quote from Nuggets head coach Michael Malone.
LeBron is arguably the best player ever. And when he comes to town and the Lakers, you know, their fans carry. But as long as their fans go home disappointed, that's all I care about. So the Warrior fans can come in here. The Celtic fans can come in here. Laker fans come in here. But take that L on the way out.
Take that on the way out. That was an awesome moment. An awesome moment, not just for Malone, but for the Nuggets organization last year. It announced they were on the big stage. They were not backing down. That was a statement. I didn't think last night would give us another moment like that, but it did. Because Davis was not the only guy battling the flu. According to LeBron's estimate, 6 players were under the weather. LeBron, Davis, Kuzma, Rondo. And they still found a way to win on the road at altitude in a game where it would have been easier to lose than win. I'll finish the thought in a minute because that was not the only statement made by a Laker last night. It was another major statement made by a Laker. And I need a little space to get into that. If it sounds like I'm kind of fired up, it's because I am. Everybody was coming hard for the Lakers. Who have they beaten? Who have they played? What have they done? What the hell does it even matter? Well, they made a statement last night. They went into Denver, and they took care of the Nuggets. 7 p.m. Eastern, we are joined by Mike Budenholzer. Mike, it is so good to have you back on. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jim?
Good, good, Mike. So 18-3, 12 straight. That's the longest winning streak for the Bucks in more than 35 years. I should probably rephrase that question. How is life right now, and what's it like coming to work every single day, knowing the potential this team has?
Yeah, no doubt life is good. Incredibly fortunate to, you know, have this team, be working with great players. Giannis is beyond words to, you know, try and describe what he brings every day to practice, to the gym, to the organization. So, yeah, as a coach, it doesn't get much better than this group.
You know, speaking of Giannis, I could get into the culture in just one moment and what you've created there. But last week, Giannis, Mike had a game against the Jazz where he went for 50 points, 14 rebounds, 6 assists, no turnovers. Given how tough Utah is defensively, how amazing was that performance even for Giannis?
Yeah, no, it stands out. He's done a lot of amazing things, you know, since I've been here for a little over a year. But to go for 50 and not turn it over against a team coached by Quinn Snyder and Utah Jazz, it's very, very impressive. So, you know, he continues to do special things, and hopefully we keep putting him in good positions and he keeps doing it.
Mike Budenholzer is my guest. Not only that, Mike, but when you look at Giannis, it's the intangibles also that he brings to it. Giannis said, quote, "We've got to do our job. It starts with the coaching staff. It starts with the leader. We're not coming out here and thinking about the 12 games we've won. We're thinking about how can I do my job? How can I win tonight? And that's the most important thing. We've got Detroit next. How can we win in Detroit? How can we go in there and play good basketball and win?" End of quote. I mean, it seems like it would be really easy for guys maybe to get caught up, maybe to start to read the headlines, believe their own hype. So how do you and the players make sure everybody stays locked in?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're big believers in our process. We kind of have our routines, and we really believe in trying to get better every day. We put a lot of time and effort into player development. And you know, if the guys are getting better individually, then we're getting better collectively, and there's just a genuine focus and effort and belief in that, and we don't kind of vary from it much. We do our work each day. We come in and we understand what winning basketball is. We try and do it every night and not be too high or too low with what happens in the game, but just keep working and keep grinding every day.
You know, Mike, when you got there, you talked about culture, process. Maybe those words are interchangeable. It seems like every single coach, Mike, that I talk to in any sport talks culture, and I'm always fascinated by it. So how would you describe your culture, and when you wanted to get there and develop winning habits, what kind of habits were you looking to preach?
Yeah, I mean, on the end part, the habits, we really felt like this team could be great defensively and, you know, build habits with like, I think, a real individual responsibility, individual accountability. Could they lock in and really guard and take responsibility for being great? And then could they work well collectively, defensively? So we've, you know, kind of gotten away from, you know, I would say we're more fundamental, more individual accountability, making them work, get after it, and, you know, cover for each other at the same time. So, and culture wise, you know, I think we want to be a place where we really care about our players. They feel it. They see it every day from, you know, the second they stop into the facility, whatever it is we're doing, they see we care about it. We think about it. And, you know, I think that pays off for us when they go out on the court. You know, they're ready to go. They play hard. They play for each other. They play unselfishly. So, and we're always working to make them better. It's good for them, you know, at this stage of their career, as they move forward in their career, if they're improving. Good things are going to happen for them, and good things are going to happen for us.
Bucks head coach Mike Budenholzer joining us, which brings me to the next point, actually. You know, a lot of people in the organization talk about when it comes to you, obviously you're a great tactician, but you understand people. You understand how to push the right buttons. I know you're not going to make it about you, but how much of the job now is about tactics and teaching, and how much of it is about the personal relationships with the players, with the coaching staff, pretty much everybody involved in the organization?
Yeah, great question. I mean, it takes both. I think the great coaches that, you know, I look up to, that we all, you know, talk about and admire from a distance, they do both. But the relationships and to be able to connect with your players and hopefully get them to push themselves, I do think it becomes more about the personal relationships and connecting with them and understanding them. And, you know, each of them's different and unique. And so, if you can do that, then I think that's a huge step towards, you know, having some success and being somebody that, you know, is a good coach. The X's and O's, my guess is all of us can do them. I don't want to say they're not complicated, it's not difficult, but, you know, it's X's and O's. It's the personal, the touch, the culture, all those things that it's harder. It's more complicated, and you got to believe in it. You got to figure out what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, and stick to it.
So I'm curious, Mike. So, like, where does that come from? If most of you guys or all of you guys can X and O at that level, and we're talking about these people skills, where do they come from? Like, are you wired with it? Are you born with it? Or do they come maybe from your early days of growing up and playing ball for Holbrook High School in Arizona on a team with players from so many different backgrounds? Did that help you?
Yeah, I think it's all of it, you know, from, you know, where you grow up and your family, your parents, brothers, sisters, the high school. I mean, I was lucky playing with half my team were Navajos from the reservation, and a lot of diversity, a lot of different backgrounds, and playing Division III ball, and all the years with the Spurs, working with Coach Pop. And it's just so many things that go into, I think, teaching you, you know, how to coach and connect with players. And I guess I'm probably born with it a little bit, or coaches are born with it a little bit, and you just got to run with it.
Mike Budenholzer joining me for a few more moments. You know, for those who do not know about basketball in the Navajo community, how intense are the games, and what do you remember about those days, and in particular, the spring tournaments?
Yeah, you've done some research. Yeah, no, I mean, there's nothing like basketball in the Navajo reservation, and really the Apache reservation also. You know, I could tell you stories about high school games where, you know, our home gym was literally packed with the visiting team who's coming in off the reservation. People are there for the freshman game at 4:30, and you got to tell your family if you want to see it, you got to be there for the freshman game at 4:30, and our game's not till 7:30, or else there's no room in the gym. They love hoops, you know, and then in the spring you're playing in these tournaments, you're playing against, you know, I'm a 16-year-old high school kid playing against 35-year-old, 40-year-old, you know, Navajo men that still love to hoop and run and shoot. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Like, that's crazy. Like, what was that like? What's it like being a teenager going up against a, you know, a grown bleep man, an aggressive guy who loved to hoop?
I had a couple bloody noses and some teeth knocked out. And I think they want to hold their space in life and keep you down for as long as they can. But it was fun. It toughens you up.
Hmm. Before I let you go, you mentioned family. You and I have talked in the past about your background in playing for your dad, Vince. But when you look back, how special were those days of playing with guys like B.J. Little, players from so many different backgrounds?
Yeah, it was great. No, I'll forever be grateful for growing up in a small town and having friends like B.J. Little, Scott Alexander, all these guys from different backgrounds. And it's a huge part of who I am today. And I appreciate you for even caring or looking it up or knowing. And I don't know that your listeners care, but it was special times.
Now, I appreciate you saying that, Mike, and I appreciate you coming on this show and making time for it and being accessible. Let me finally ask you, you know, I've talked to the San Antonio Spurs players over the years about what it's like to play for Pop. What was it like to work for Pop?
Yeah, it was special. You know, like we talked a little bit about just the care factor, you know, when players know you care about them. And in my case, the staff, as an assistant coach, you know that Pop cares about you. He wants good things for your family and your life. But there's also an intensity. You want to do your job well. You don't want to make a mistake. You know that he values your opinion. He values your work. And it just makes coming to work, you know, good every day. You feel very important and feel like what you're doing makes a difference.
And finally, Mike, was he good about, I mean, if you have a staff and you need a really good staff and it's going to make your life and your job easier, but you want guys that are ambitious, you want guys that want to go out on their own, guys like you, was he good about kind of walking that line about, yeah, I need you here and I appreciate you here, but I'm gonna do whatever I can to help you get your own shot?
Yeah, no, for sure. He was always encouraging, you know, all of us. A lot of us are now coaching in the league, but he wanted you to grow and push the limit and go out on your own and try and do it yourself. And he was always, always pushing us to grow and to be better. And he never, ever made us feel like we had to stay or held us back in any way. He was very much pushing us and helping us any chance he got.
You know that your genes are not just about you. It's something that you share with the people closest to you. Uncovering potential health issues early can help empower you with the information you need so you and your family can move forward to a healthier future, which brings me to Ancestry Health. With Ancestry Health, you can discover how your DNA might influence certain health conditions and the steps that you can take with a healthcare provider to chart a healthier path forward. What I'm saying is this. Some health conditions can be influenced by genetics. Ancestry Health looks at a carefully selected set and gives you insights about how they could impact you and your family both. Ancestry Health gives you personalized health reports that are easy to understand with actionable insights and access to genetic counseling resources, plus a family history tool to track generations of health. And then, of course, you'll also receive Ancestry DNA ethnicity results that reveal your origins as well. You can learn from your genes and take action for your family. So go to Ancestry.com/Rome and learn more and get your Ancestry Health kit right now. That's Ancestry.com/Rome. Ancestry Health includes laboratory tests developed and performed by an independent CLIA certified laboratory partner and with oversight from an independent clinician network of board certified physicians and genetic counselors. Ancestry Health is not currently available in New York, New Jersey, or Rhode Island. Before I read it, I want to again remind the listening audience, this is not necessarily a family program. This will never be a kid's show. This show is not for kids. Like, I know some of you dads want to share it with your sons. Make sure they're of age. I want to make sure that you know this before I do this segment. This is not a kid's show. Never has been, never will be. If you have kids in the car and you do not want to have to explain exactly what's going on, I would suggest maybe you find something else for just a few minutes and then double back. Just don't tell me I didn't warn you. Not a kid's show. Are we all clear on that? All right? So Wells tweets out the following from last night. Again, I've got nothing to do with this. This is just somebody who listens to the program. Wells tweets, quote, "What's a sound drop from the Jim Rome show that can also be said during sex?" See, here's the thing about the show. I know a lot of you are running around repeating things you hear on the program, repeating things I've said, repeating things other people have said, repeating drops, working it into your everyday life and your vernacular. That's the first time I've ever heard somebody pose the question, yeah, but what's a sound drop from the show that can be said during sex? All right, now let me be straight. It's never crossed my mind, ever. But apparently it did cross the mind of Wells in the 360, and dude did get responses. Lots and lots of responses. Some are actually funny, some are even usable, which I'll get to in a second. But again, I do find the concept pretty interesting because we've got 3 decades worth of audio on the program, and I found out after going through the comments on this thread that some of it, I guess, maybe could work in the bedroom. Again, the question, what's a sound drop from the Jim Rome show that can also be said during sex? This is not a kid's program. You have been warned. Let's go to the replies. Again, the question, what's a sound drop from the Jim Rome show that can be said during sex? And when I say sex, I mean coitus. It's a good word now, coitus. Can you spell that? I know you can't, Hawk, because you don't have coitus and you didn't graduate high school. Anyway, let's get to it. What's a sound drop from the Jim Rome show that can also be said during sex? Stephen Crowtown leads off with, "Giddy up, horse face!
Giddy up, horse face! Come on!"
How does that work? How does that even fit? Dude, who are you sleeping with? Who do you lie down with? Giddy up, horse face?
Giddy up, horse face! Come on!
Maybe this segment was not a good idea. Wow. Anyway, what's a sound drop from the Jim Rome show that can also be said during sex? Darren and Kuma is going with the Decca Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah!
Someone's feeling pretty good about them. All right. Better. Pretty happy with yourself, huh, Darren? Darren's not even going to go with, how was that for you? Darren's like, I already know how that was for you. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Your partner is running out of the room, and you're doing a victory lap yourself. Look at me. This segment was not a real good idea, I don't think. Let's try another one. What's a sound drop from the Jim Rome Show that can also be said during sex? Rich in the Lou is in with, boom, out of here.
Boom. Hey. Out of here.
Well, that's pretty respectful. And none of that, hey, let's cuddle. Boom, out of here.
Boom. Hey. Out of here.
Got things to do, places to be. Boom, out of here.
Boom. Hey. Out of here.
And this guy, Tim Roller. Chase that with the tried and true, now I'm done.
Now I'm done.
Well, you clones are smooth. Got some smooth raps. Boom, out of here, and now I'm done.
Hey. Out of here.
Now I'm done.
Again, this is all Wells's fault. Wells in the 360 on Twitter last night, quote, what's a sound drop from the Jim Rome Show that can also be said during sex? Gabe in Van City checks in with, it was good.
It was good.
It was good.
It was good.
How was that? It was good.
It was good.
I don't know, Gabe. But Gabe sounds like a guy who gets it so often that, you know, what do you expect? I mean, it was good.
It was
not
good.
Great. Far from perfect. It was good. I mean, I'll give you a 4 out of 50.
Good.
It was good.
It was good.
Man, I hope this segment ends soon. Wells in the 360 again on Twitter with the question, what's a sound drop from the Jim Rome Show that can also be said during sex? Ray in SA. Keeping it in house with Brad in Corona.
Brad in Corona.
Ray, why would you be screaming another dude's name when you're with your significant other? Not your name, but Brad's name. That'd be confusing.
Brad and Corona.
Jacob in NorCal is in. You want to keep it simple. In response to the question, what's the sound drop from the Jim Rome Show that can also be said during sex? Jacob in NorCal checking in with, uh-oh! Uh-oh! Geoff and Lincoln wanted to play the game. Geoff and Lincoln tweets, War me and my fiance? You'd say that during sex? This guy's got it. Finally, some respect. What's a sound drop from the Jim Rome Show that can be also said during sex? Dean, no longer in the O, chimes in with a classic. I think what I'm supposed to say is, thank you, I'm out.
I think what I'm supposed to say is, thank you, I'm out.
Coming towards the end of this thread, Brimsley Covington going simply with, that's two for me.
It's two for me. It's two for me.
Yeah, but who's counting? That's two for you, Brimsley. 2 minutes, brah. 2 seconds. Hey, Brimsley, two for you, or were you struggling?
Struggling.
Some cat named Albie checked in. Albie checked in with, good night now.
Good night.
Imagine screaming that. I'm sure your partner, whoever it is, really appreciates that. What are you screaming at? Good night now!
Good night now!
Wrapping up a really regrettable segment. I thought it was a good idea when I started, but it's not. But now I'm in too far. Wells tweeted last night, what's a sound drop from the Jim Rome Show that can also be said during sex? Canadian Hitman had to play. He comes in with, quote, man's game.
Man's game.
Well, you dudes are all really respectful and respectable and dignified and classy. And I bet you all get more sex than you even know what to do with. Pete in St. John in the thread with, dude, yes, yes.
Dude, yes, yes.
And finally, in response to the question, what is a sound drop from the Jim Rome show that can also be said during sex? Violent JC. Just playing the hits with, and I quote, he's the hot dog king of Maine. Come on.
He's the hot dog king of Maine.
Come on.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call. It's probably 50 more that I'm not going to play. And I do have all the drops. They're just not appropriate. If you think many of those were inappropriate, imagine the ones that I cannot play. You know, the Toby drops, the Mark Grace resets, Shaq doing what Shaq does. The key here is nuance, subtlety, double entendres. It doesn't work if it's straight sex. We're doing subtlety, not porn. Anyway, Wells, they say that even a broken clock is right twice a day. And I've got to say that even an ice cold tweeter gets one right once a decade. Nice work, sort of. If you understand the concept of double meanings, nuance, subtlety, you might get in for a segment like that. Maybe. None of you did. None of the ones I read. And certainly none of the ones that I didn't read. But I want to acknowledge, since I always say, ask not what I can do for you, but what you can do for the jungle. And old Wells did something for the jungle. And it was Twitter generated. You see, this is why I'm saying get on Twitter. I might use something. I might read your tweet. I might retweet your tweet. Or, in the rare case of Wells, I may take your thread and turn it into a segment, which I did. You've got a phone, use it, but use it for the right reason. Mike Norvell is the head coach at Memphis. He joins us once again. Mike, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. Thanks so much for having me on, and it's always good on championship week to get a little jungle karma, so definitely excited about it.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Championship week, Mike, good to talk to you. Let me first ask you, coming off that win over Cincinnati on Friday night, you opened up with a kickoff return for a touchdown. We've talked about special teams in the past, but that was the program's 11th kickoff return for a TD in the last 4 years, which is the most in the country. So how do you explain the fact that even though the opposition knows your history with kickoffs, you're still able to execute and make teams play consistently?
Well, you know, it's something that's big in the culture of our program. And, you know, I'll never forget my first meeting here when I got the job at Memphis. They had gone 20 years without returning a kickoff or a touchdown. And I told the entire team that was a stat that was going to change. And we bought into that. We got some phenomenal players. Our kids, they believe in what we're asking them to do. They want to make an impact. We tell our guys all the time, this is a program that's built for playmakers. And whether that's utilizing you in the return game, you know, on offense or defense, it's our job to showcase the skills and talents that they have. And we've been able to do that even this year. We returned 3 kickoffs for touchdown and all by three different young men. And so there's a great culture here in place, but, you know, just some phenomenal young men and talented players.
It's a program built for playmakers, which brings me to my next point. Mike Norvell joining us. I mean, that was an enormous way to start that game, but you know Cincinnati, they were not going to lie down. You were up 20-17 early in the fourth quarter. 2nd and 7, you go with a reverse flea flicker. It was executed perfectly. It resulted in a 46-yard TD. What was the thinking going into that play, and then how pleased were you with the execution?
You know, it was. I thought our guys did a great job with that. You know, Cincinnati had the number one defense in our league, and anytime you get 2 top 20 teams competing against each other, you know, with the championship on the line, we were competing for the Western Division last week. You know, it's gonna be back and forth, and we felt like we needed a spark. You know, it's something we had worked with that play the last couple of weeks, and the opportunity to present itself. And you know, it's always good when you see the hard work that goes into practice. To be able to execute a play at a critical time and for that to pay off on game day. And, you know, I thought Brady and DeMonte did a wonderful job in their execution. And, you know, it was a huge play in the game.
Mike Norvell joining us. All right, you mentioned Brady because later in the fourth quarter, your quarterback Brady White was picked off, but the defense went out and had back-to-back tackles for a loss as part of a 3-and-out that forced a punt. So how significant was that moment and how pleased were you with the defense overall in the second half?
Yeah, I think our defense has played at a high level. And if you look at our football team as a whole, You know, this has been a football team that's really built itself off its response, and that's what good teams do. Is that, you know, regardless of the situation, you go out there and you have to respond at a high level. And you know, you've seen that throughout the year. You know, each phase of the game has had to carry its own weight and respond. You know, sometimes in some challenging circumstances, and that's what our defense did the other day. You know, especially there late in the game, and you know, that's something that you're proud to see, the maturity and the growth of your team and the individual players, and to be able to finish it out like we did was pretty special.
Memphis head football coach Mike Norvell is my guest. And then you have Kenneth Gainwell, who was named the conference rookie of the year. He went for more than 100 yards from scrimmage against Cincinnati. He leads all freshmen in FBS in rushing yardage and all-purpose yardage. How special is he?
I mean, he's such a dynamic player, and he's a young man. When we recruited him, we knew that he had a chance to be one of those elite athletes and showcase type players. But you know, his growth, the development he's had in a short period of time here has been fun to watch. He's an incredible young man, and to see him really get thrust into the action early in the season when our starting running back Patrick Taylor went down, and he embraced every day. He prepares in practice, his work ethic, the attention to detail which he brings, and then obviously the versatility he has. You know, he's a dynamic threat out of the backfield as a pass receiver as well, and so just seeing his growth as each week's gone by, he's having a special season, and he's got a great career in front of him.
You know, Mike, I know it's championship weeks, you've got a lot of work still to do, but you've won 3 straight division titles. The team has won 11 games for the first time in history. Is it something that you and the players have allowed to sink in, or do you immediately shift to preparing for the next game?
You know, it's always been about the next game, and I'll tell you, that's something that you even starting back in January of last year. You know, I know we've talked before about the amount of change that we had within the coaching staff and all the lessons that were learned in these past couple of years. And really, you know, this year's focus has been all about getting better each and every day. And I think our football team has done that. In really coming into this week, you go back to back having to play Cincinnati the last week of the season, and then here for a championship. And to be honest with you, it's not really about the opponent; it's about ourselves. And that's what our team has embraced, is that we have to go out there this week and be the best version of ourselves, correct the mistakes that we've made. And if we can do that and continue to do that play after play for 60 minutes on Saturday, I'll be able to live with whatever the outcome is. But I got a lot of faith in this team.
You know, Mike, I guess in a way you just kind of answered my next question, but it is really kind of unusual. You're going up against Cincinnati again. You're coming off the win over Cincinnati on Friday night, so you're getting ready to face them for the conference title. And I get that the focus is on you, but what's that process like? How different is it when you face the same team twice in 8 days?
I mean, it's so very unique. I've never done this before in my coaching career, and there's been times we've played the same opponent twice in a year, but never back to back. And so we know it's going to be a challenge. We know there's going to be adjustments. There's going to be things that are probably unexpected that are going to show up, in the game on Saturday. But then there's also some familiarity, and really more than anything else, just the personnel, the way that the matchup played out last week. Cincinnati was without their quarterback this past week, so that'll probably be a pretty significant change here. This Saturday, but for us, it's all about going out there and playing, playing Memphis Tiger football. And if we can continue to focus on the little things, the details, and execute the plan that we have, I'm very confident in our team and what we'll work to do.
We're talking to Memphis head football coach Mike Norvell for another moment or so. It is championship week. You mentioned that they've got a quarterback switch. Probably the expectation is that Cincinnati will go back to Desmond Ridder at quarterback now that he's healthier. So how much does that impact your preparation?
Really, last week we prepared for him the entire week. So it was more of a shock last week when he didn't play than obviously coming back this week with him playing. And so we prepared at a high level these last couple of weeks. And we know regardless of whatever they throw at us, we're gonna have to be able to adapt and adjust to whatever we see. But he's a very talented young man. I mean, he's won 21 games over his career. Very experienced, composed. He can hurt you with his arm and his legs, and they do a great job with them with what they ask him to do within their schemes.
Mike, I know you're trying to keep everybody locked in and focused, but the fan base obviously is so fired up because of what a win on Saturday might mean in terms of not only the conference title, but what it would mean in terms of a bowl game. And to that end, the fans were lined up on Monday to buy tickets for the game. Any idea what the Liberty Bowl is going to sound like and feel like come Saturday?
I mean, it's going to be incredible. And it's something that, you know, this year, I mean, our fan base, the support that we have within this community, it's been special to see, you know, being able to host game day earlier this season, a sold out crowd of right around 60,000 people all in blue. That was a special moment. And now also, you know, being able to host the championship game here, it's incredible to see. And I know that our fan base is excited. It's going to be a great atmosphere. We need it to be an incredible home field advantage. And I know all of Memphis is going to do their part.
And then finally, amazing to see, especially given where you started. And I understand there's unfinished business once again. But as you know, there were times in the past where maybe the impression was that the school may have been reluctant to invest in football. But the investment is there now in terms of facilities, and the results are showing up on the field. How much pride then is there for you that the investments and the commitments were made and you're paying it back with 37 wins and counting?
Well, you know, I'm so humbled for the opportunity, and you know, this is my first head coaching job, and I was grateful to be given the chance to lead this program, and for what we've been able to do and how we've been able to continue to progress it over the last 4 years. It's to see us now in our third straight championship game, and with a school all-time record for wins in a season. The great players that I get to coach each and every day that are winning, you know, not only on the field but off of it as well. It's what you hope for. And, you know, we've got bright days ahead of us, and, you know, it's all pointing towards this Saturday. And if we can find a way to be successful, knowing what that next step would be, it's a special time to be a Memphis Tiger, and I'm honored to be able to lead this team.
You bet. Championship week. The American Athletic Conference Championship game is Saturday, Cincinnati at Memphis. They're going to run that thing back. Memphis 11-1, 7-1 in conference play, number 16 in the AP and the coaches' polls. And in his fourth season, joining us in the middle of championship week, Mike Norvell. Mike, so good to have you back. Listen, good luck this weekend, and always good to talk to you.
Thank you, Jim. And you have a great rest of the week, and go Tigers.
Let's find out. We go to Parody Larry. Hey, Lawrence, what's up?
Hey, Jim. How are you, buddy? As far as Wells' question goes, every time I have sex, during it, all I ever hear is, why? Why? And when I'm done, they always say, hit the road, Dak.
And that's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Good night now!